ladies and gentlemen. This is Fulton Lewis, Jr., speaking from the studios of radio station WOL in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Mr. Andrew Jackson Higgins, the quantity production boat builder of New Orleans, changed his mind last night, and instead of going to California to confer with the spectacular Mr. Henry J. Kaiser, the other quantity production boat builder there, Mr. Higgins stayed in Washington and took his fight over his shipyard in Louisiana to Congress. Late yesterday afternoon, you know, the Maritime Commission reaffirmed its cancellation of Mr. Higgins' contract to build an immense new shipyard there in Louisiana to turn out 200 cargo ships beginning this fall. Mr. Higgins covered almost everything in Washington yesterday. Everything and everyone trying to save that contract. He went to the Navy, the Maritime Commission, the White House, the War Production Board, and Vice President Wallace. All to no avail. Last night, he canceled his reservations to the Pacific Coast, and this morning he popped up in a secret session of the Merchant Marine Committee of the House of Representatives. I've told you what an amazing cyclonic dynamo this Andrew Jackson Higgins is. When that meeting was finally over this morning and the members of the House committee came out, they were the members themselves were limp and out of breath and all but worn out just listening to Mr. Higgins' testimony. Mr. Higgins himself was fresh as a May morn. I might note that he got results, temporary results anyway. The committee voted to introduce a resolution, and it was introduced a short time later, calling on the Maritime Commission to hold up this cancellation order until the Congressional Committee can make an investigation of the whole matter. Those investigations, the hearings, will begin tomorrow morning. So at least all of the facts will be aired about this Louisiana shipbuilding contract that didn't materialize, and even the airing is healthy. The House of Representatives was to have taken up the synthetic rubber bill this afternoon, the legislation that was passed by the Senate yesterday, and which sets up a new separate agency to have charge of the production of synthetic rubber from alcohol. Unfortunately, however, it was delayed by a filibuster on the part of Representative Rankin of Mississippi. The first order of business today, ahead of that synthetic rubber bill on the calendar, was a bill setting up machinery to enable the men in the service to vote in the election campaigns of this fall. Representative Rankin was personally opposed to that bill, and so he put on a one-man campaign to delay action on it as much as possible. He was quite successful, by the way. On every possible occasion, he demanded a roll call, and a roll call in the House of Representatives consumed 25 minutes of time. Representative Michener of Michigan demanded that the Speaker rule Representative Rankin out of order for obstructing government business, but Speaker Rayburn said that he was reluctant to do that, so it dragged on and on late into the afternoon. The net result is that they did not get around to the synthetic rubber bill. In the meantime, the Rubber Reserves Corporation backed down on one point that's been hanging fire for a long time in their synthetic rubber, in their general rubber program. Months ago, a man by the name of Harold A. Sims of Texas tried to get the government to authorize a scrap rubber reclaiming plant at Fort Worth, Texas, with a capacity of some 30,000 tons of rubber per year. That was the incident in which Mr. Sims was told, you probably remember it, that he would have to have engineering plans, detailed specifications, a complete program and plan that would cost him about $50,000 in engineering fees. When he failed to produce those plans, he failed also to get a contract from Mr. Stanley J. Crossland, who runs the Rubber Reserves Corporation. Today, however, the Rubber Reserves Corporation seems to have changed its point of view. It quietly reversed that original decision, and it gave Mr. Sims his contract to be financed half by Mr. Sims and half by the government. $500,000 plant at Fort Worth, Texas. So there are facilities for handling 30,000 tons of scrap rubber in addition to all of the rest of the rubber program, which helps that much more. I learned this afternoon that the Navy Department is convinced that German submarines operating along the Atlantic seaboard and in the Caribbean are not refueling in Latin American countries, certainly not to any appreciable extent. Reports that they have been refueling in Latin America have been going the round for some time, as you know. You probably have heard speculation on that score. Navy officials point out, however, that there are very strong reasons why that is impractical. For one thing, is what you might call a time bottleneck, a time limit on the endurance of a submarine crew. They are never allowed on deck, you know, from the time that they leave their home port until they return. They never see the light of day. They never see the stars of the moon at night. And it's impossible to keep those men of the crew on duty for longer than 6 or 7 weeks at a time. It might be worthwhile to refuel on this side of the Atlantic, but only if it could be done at some place where the crew could come ashore for a couple of days of sunshine and rest. And the Navy has been and is combing the entire Latin American coastline for any slightest indications of a spot of that kind. Furthermore, they say that the Latin American governments in the Caribbean area are cooperating completely and perfectly and enthusiastically to prevent any such thing. They believe that there may be cases in which German submarines are getting small amounts of provisions from agents ashore. For instance, it's possible that a German submarine may surface at night in some remote spot well offshore and send a rubber raft or a small boat ashore to keep a few fresh fruits or vegetables. That's valuable because it helps keep up the morale of the crew. But they say there is no evidence of anything more extensive than that. In those recent arrests that were made in several Central American countries, the persons who were seized apparently were making preparations for contacts of that kind. Another thing that Germany is known to have tried to get in small quantities in Latin America is lubricating oil. There is a shortage of lubricating oil, and a very serious one in Germany, as you probably know. There are a couple of other points, too. The fact that the submarines can carry only so many torpedoes, and it would be pretty difficult to get a new supply on this side, and it also would be difficult to load the torpedoes aboard, even if they could get them, without adequate loading facilities and something in the way of a naval base. Now, I have one bit of good news for you tonight, news on the encouraging side of the gasoline and oil shortage situation in the eastern seaboard states. A contribution toward a solution, at least. It is only in the making, but it definitely is on its way. And it has to do with the oil fields in the state of Illinois. It's highly desirable, of course, that we get just as much production as possible from those Illinois fields because, as you've heard many, many times, the shortage in the East is due to a lack of transportation facilities. And if we can get oil from Illinois instead of from Oklahoma and Texas, it means that the oil has to be shipped only one-third as far, which actually multiplies the shipping capacity of each available railroad tank car by three. Each tank car can deliver three loads to the Atlantic seaboard from Illinois in the time it takes to deliver one load from Texas. Last December, Secretary Ickes' Office of the Oil Coordinator issued a new set of regulations. It's called Regulation M68, restricting the way that drilling is done in the Illinois field and also in the California field, which is similar. He says that the purpose of it was conservation and the saving of the steel pipe that's used in drilling a well, all of which is highly meritorious. Except that the actual result of that M68 order has been to cut down the actual amount of oil produced by the Illinois field to the extent of 114,000 barrels of oil per day, less now than was being produced last December. That's a lot of oil, 114,000 barrels a day, when you stop to consider that the present shortage on the Atlantic seaboard is only about 250,000 barrels a day. The oil producers from Illinois have been protesting for months, and the only reason the general public in the East has not been protesting far more loudly than the Illinois oil producers is that the public didn't know about it. All of those protests, however, have fallen on deaf ears. Mr. Ickes has turned them down adamantly time after time. Finally, Senator Scott Lucas of Illinois got stirred up about it, and when the recent bill to authorize a pipeline in the Barge Canal across Florida to help relieve the oil shortage in the East was on its way through the Senate, Senator Lucas proposed an amendment that would overrule Mr. Ickes' regulation, and that began to bring results. Mr. Ickes suggested that they hold a conference, which they did, but he still was disinclined to do anything about it. Then all of a sudden, it developed somehow or other that a new regulation had been drafted in the office of the oil coordinator, preparatory to being issued by the deputy oil coordinator, Mr. Ralph Davies, who came to Washington from the Standard Oil Company of California. This regulation was actually in typewritten form, altering Regulation M68 for the oil industry out there in California, but not doing anything for the oil industry in Illinois. Senator Lucas insisted that if the regulation was not changed for Illinois, too, he would put through his amendment to the pipeline barge canal bill that was then on its way through the Senate. Mr. Rickey's finally came through with a promise to do so. He said that he first would have to send a group of experts to Illinois to make a survey on which to base the change of regulation, but that the change would be made. Those experts have been sent to Illinois. Their report will be forthcoming in a week or so, and presumably, so will the revision of Regulation M68. There's some difference of opinion as to exactly how much of an increase this change will produce in actual oil production. The Illinois operators say it'll be about an increase of about 125,000 barrels a day or better, which would be half of the shortage right there. The Office of the Oil Coordinator says that it will be less than that, but they give no exact estimate. In any event, it's a clear gain over what we're getting now, and that helps. Meanwhile, there's still another ray of hope for relief in this tight eastern oil situation. This one is given by experiments which are now being conducted in the matter of clay pipe for oil pipeline systems instead of steel pipe. All of our pipelines in the past have been made from steel, but there's not enough steel available now for any extensive new lines, as you know. That is one of our chief difficulties and one of the principal reasons why there's an oil shortage on the eastern seaboard. But this experiment with clay pipe opens up some entirely new possibilities and some very bright ones. I'm told the plans are now fairly well along for the construction of a 65-mile baked clay pipeline from the Mississippi oil fields to the Mississippi River. The line will be a gravity line, and it won't require any pumping equipment. And if it works out all right, it probably will become a part of a far more extensive system, which will dump oil from the Texas and southern fields by clay pipe, barge line, steel pipe, more clay pipe, right into the center of the eastern area where oil now is scarce. That's the top of the news as it looks from here, ladies and gentlemen. Until tomorrow evening, good night.
Mondays through Fridays at this time, Fulton Lewis, Jr. brings you the top of the news from your nation's capital. These broadcasts originate in the studios of WOL in Washington. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.